Is someone actively trying to ice skate uphill? Or is that a saying that I'm not aware of?
It's a saying that no one was aware of except Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes uses motherfucker trying to roll ice skates uphill.
Some motherfucker's always trying to ice skate uphill. It's what he says in Blade to Steven Dorff right before he kills
Steven Dorff. Yeah.
And it's one of those lines that, like, he said it and movie history was made because no one
knows what that means.
No one's ever heard that phrase before. And he said it like it's just a thing everyone says. And it's genius.
The last time I watched that movie, I was on shrooms in a hot tub.
Hell yeah.
That sounds good. Yeah.
How you should watch that.
That's what I like.
I feel like I would watch the whole trilogy that way.
Yeah. Including, of course, the best of the trilogy.
Don't say it.
Blade Trinity.
Don't say it.
The absolute number one best.
Why would you say that?
Because I speak the truth. Yeah. That's why. It is.
This is a Blade Trinity positive podcast. Oof.
Blade Trinity is the best.
Well, I'm going to.
It has Natasha Lyonne in it.
New snowflakes.
Now, that voice is the sound of our special guest today. Self-proclaimed. Gonna be a bad guest today, Andy Sell.
Fantastic.
I'm one of your hosts, Vanessa Gritton.
And I'm another one of them, Olivia Haidar. But no, here's the thing about Blade Trinity.
Yeah.
Is it has an incredible cast. An incredible cast. Absolutely.
Incredible.
Top to bottom. Just heavy hitters across the park. You got
Hunter Helmsley.
Hunter Helmsley.
Slaps.
At the top, you've got man himself, Wesley Snipes. Of course. Yeah. Come on, we got to give it up.
No, for sure.
And then we got Kate Beckinsale. Not Kate Beckinsale.
No, Jessica Biel.
Jessica Biel. My God.
You got your vampire. I got
my
vampire. Yeah, confused.
My early 2000s vampire movies mixed up. And then you got Ryan Reynolds.
Fun.
Come on.
Hella fun.
Maybe his best role?
Easily.
I mean, definitely the reason why he was Deadpool.
Absolutely.
I think.
Yeah, no, easily.
Easy case to make.
Yeah, for sure.
Not that Deadpool. But that's
Parker
where
I, Posey,
this
yeah.
is where I'm getting. Parker Posey. Parker Posey.
Bury the lead.
Delivers the performance of a lifetime.
Okay.
And in that movie.
Chris Christopherson.
It's tied with House of Yes. It's Blade Trinity and House of Yes are tied.
Exactly.
For the best Parker Posey performance. Yeah.
And I think Blade Trinity ekes it out, you know?
Who plays the...
she's so good.
Who fucking... I gotta look it up. Who plays the
I can tell you. I'm a human...
Is the answer Triple H?
The new tech guy.
Patton Oswalt.
In Blade Trinity, it's Patton Oswalt?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Patton Oswalt, yeah. And then also Natasha Lyonne is also in the crew playing a blind lady.
She changed the way we all say cockroach.
Exactly.
When did she do that?
What? Blade Trinity or cockroach?
Cockroach.
Russian doll.
Oh, I haven't seen
she
it.
She refers to herself, I'm a cockroach.
And you've got...
That's how she says that word.
Oh, my God.
The best screen Dracula, maybe? I mean, what? Bela Lugosi, move
what?
Over.
All right.
And that's how Olivia gets mutiny to happen.
Oh, my God.
Gary Oldman? Pa! No,
fucking
give
James.
Me big old cube-headed Dominic Purcell.
How are you the last person I know that writes things off with pa?
Pa! Pa! James Remar and... my God, I literally just looked at it. It's James Remar. Eric Bogosian. James Remar and Eric Bogosian are also both in Blade Trinity. So yes, Blade Trinity has the best cast.
It's it's really, I think, underrated.
Yeah,
I think
I haven't seen it since.
You haven't watched it since
the theater? Maybe no, I've seen it once since the theater, but it's been years.
You might want to revisit it.
Oh yeah, God, don't tell me that.
It's pretty fun.
I just did that in a hot tub on shrooms and it was worth it.
You know what?
The whole Blade, everything.
Oh, you watch the whole trilogy that way?
In a hot tub.
It's
amazing I didn't die.
Yeah. Wait, what? Were there vampires in the hot tub?
No, it's just a lot of heat for also being on shrooms at the same time and not thinking about hydrating yourself.
You're invincible when you're on shrooms.
John Michael Higgins.
A lot of people don't know
this.
John
Michael Higgins.
You literally can't die when you're on mushrooms.
Oh, man.
John Michael Higgins.
Oh, in Blade Trinity?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm still on Blade Trinity.
Dominic Purcell?
How psychedelics make you literally invincible.
It's true. Yeah, you can do anything. You can jump off a roof. You can
you can literally fly.
Yeah, you can fly.
Yeah.
It's great.
Could you just read a Castaneda book? And then...
So we're talking about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. So, hi, welcome to Lowest Common Phenomenator, I guess. This is our podcast.
My God, Olivia.
It's not chaotic.
Did I do this? Did I ruin this?
No.
Is it always like this?
Andy.
It's not your
trust
fault.
Trust me.
Okay.
It's not your fault.
Okay.
You don't know. You don't get to. You don't get to do that. You don't know.
It's literally the only thing I know from it.
We've had the Good Will Hunting. You've not seen.
Yeah,
that.
It was. You asked me if I had seen Good Will Hunting, and I said, "Yeah, it's about math, right?" And then you said, "It's not your fault movie," and I was like, "Oh, I saw that in Family Guy."
Yeah, I said it was kind of about math.
It is kind of
like,
and I'm not quoting Good Will Hunting. I'm quoting Family Guy.
Well, that is.
Does that make it better?
I'm not going to lie. That is illegal on this podcast. I hate to say this, but I've got to lock you up.
Oh, God.
I have to arrest you and remove you from the studio.
I have to go back to Vanessa jail, and it's literally just a suitcase with a hole in it that Olivia puts me in.
Exactly. Because this is a no-no. You are impeached.
Wait, what's the crime here? The Family Guy quoting?
Yes.
Oh yeah, no, that's reasonable.
Instead of Good Will Hunting, it's the one that I know. Also, my Earl Grey lavender tea says Earl Grey Love on it, and it made me laugh because it looks like it's the name of a Bond villain, Earl Grey Love.
Yeah. Fucking great.
What's happening?
I think we're off to a tremendous start here. This is one of our better and more coherent openings.
Yeah,
I would say so.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm going to attribute that to your steady hand.
I'm helping.
Exactly. It's your influence.
This is part of the charm.
Andy, we're so happy to have you here. Thank you. Thank you for being on
the show. Thank you for being here, Andy. Even though you sat down and said, "I'm going to be a bad guest today."
I'm going to be a bad guest today. I don't have a plan to be a bad guest. I'm not intentionally going. It was just like, I don't know if I'm going to be good at this today.
Yeah.
But I'm having fun.
I mean, to be fair, you were in like a weird position with it because you came to the studio for another reason.
Yeah.
And we'd had plans to have you on to talk about this movie before that had all fallen through and weird scheduling things had happened. And then it just so happened that you were going to be here.
Yeah.
Today.
By coincidence, I was here while you were about to record the episode, and it was like, oh, I kind of prepared for this.
Yeah, because Adam was going to teach you how to use a computer.
Yeah. I've never used a computer before, so this is exciting for me.
I mean, yeah, it's a day of firsts. We're learning lessons here today in Lowest Common Phenomenator. I am all over the place today.
Yeah.
I'm just scattered. I don't know what's going on. My brain feels like it's on fire.
You know what I think it is?
What?
Because I've been feeling that way, and so has my roommate. I legitimately think it's this. A combination of all the smoke in the air and the seasons changing, everyone's just in a perpetual state of restless and tired all at once.
Yeah. Also, it's been 3 years of like, you know, the filter being off.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. So it's been like we're all kind of at an exhaustion ceiling anyway.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. My stress levels are already high, and then
nobody's happy.
No one is.
No one.
And if you are, then that means that you're probably.
It means you're a psychic vampire.
Like, something is like you might be part of the problem.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The amount of times that I've like met a girl this year where they're just like, I'm just thriving, and I'm like, oh my God, nothing hurts you.
You're thriving in 2019.
Yeah. Anything that's thriving tough. Right now is definitely some kind of monster.
Emotional vampire.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's why we got Dr. Sleep in theaters to tell us all about the emotional vampires.
I'm excited.
Did you read that book?
Yeah. No.
More Stephen King podcast, too.
You know, I did read it. I just reread some King stuff over the last week because it's just what my comfort is in the fall. And I forgot how much a very specific Stephen King creature fucks up my world. I hate the Lobstrosities. I hate the Lobstrosities. I hate them.
The monsters from Dark Tower.
So much.
I Never read it.
Never read The Dark Tower?
No, no. I don't mean, it's like, what is it, like 12 books or something?
It's
like
seven books.
It's too long. I can't do it.
It's seven books that are all mostly, except for one, very, very long.
Yeah.
I get it. They're great.
They're great.
They're his best work. Really
it's
terrific.
A masterpiece. And if I could ever describe the Lobstrosities, it's like lobsters that cut off bits of your body.
Yeah, they're basically giant talking lobsters. But they don't talk. They just make weird talking noises.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. they cut off the hero's fingers at the first like it's the first thing that happens in the second book.
Oh, really?
Spoilers.
Yeah. After they just made a whole thing about how he's going to need to use his hand.
that all came from Dr. Sleep, which is coming out soon and is not the movie that we're talking about today.
No, it's not. It's not even related to the movie we're talking about.
I don't really give a shit.
Same lead. I did. Actually.
Yeah.
Dr. Sleep is not only being an
Jack Nicholson.
It's not only an adaptation of the book. It's also
a sequel
to The Shining.
That is true. So there is kind of a connection.
Yeah. See, our guest made a great segue.
This is great.
Now let's squander it.
Never mind. I don't give. Yeah, you know, it's fine.
What? Thank you for the amazing segue, Andy.
Oh!
I'm not being sarcastic.
No, I know. I just don't know how to take compliments or appreciation of any kind.
Well, I legitimately appreciate you. How old were you the first time you saw this movie?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. Because
I think 14.
Yeah,
14 or 15.
I feel like this is one of those movies that everyone in the universe watched too young.
Yeah.
I saw it when I was in high school.
Well,
loved it.
Did they show it in your high school?
No, I watched it outside of school. I was a movie.
Yeah, same here. I watched it outside of school, and then when they watched it in school, I was like, I've already seen this.
Yeah.
You guys watched it in school?
Yeah, I'm surprised you watched it in school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw it because my parents were watching it late at night, and they hated it. They spent the entire movie talking about how much they couldn't hate it, and I was horrified the whole movie and obsessed with Jack Nicholson's face because I was a child and I didn't understand any of what was happening. And then I watched it as an adult, and then I felt head over heels in love.
Yeah. So we're talking about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a classic film, 1975. And we're talking about it because it's the second highest grossing movie in 1975. A little bit of background, directed by Miloš Forman. Who has had an interesting filmography, at least since The Cuckoo's Nest. He directed Amadeus.
Mm-hmm. It's a movie I adore.
Yeah, I mean it's a classic. But he also directed
Hair.
Hair. Another one of those big teenage movies for me.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the second time Jack Nicholson's on the top 10 list too.
This was after Hair, right?
Cuckoo's
Nest
yes.
was after
yeah,
Hair. Because I think Hair was his first
American
film.
Yeah.
Because Tommy.
Yeah, no, Jack Nicholson wasn't Tommy. Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just doing the population math in my head.
Doing math in our head right now. things.
Well, because it's number two, so I've been spending a lot of time thinking about, other than critical acclaim, what made it number two.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Nicholson having a particularly hot streak that year probably had something to do with it.
Sure, yeah.
Between that and 74, it was like when we were just starting to figure out, we like this guy.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Nicholson, massive star.
Yeah.
What can you even say about Jack Nicholson?
Loves the Lakers.
He really does. That seems to be about it these days for old Jack. Haven't seen him in a while. His last movie was, I believe,
It was James one L. after Brooks. The Departed, right?
After The Departed, he had like The Bucket List.
Right.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yeah, and then after The Bucket List, he did it was How Do You Know, with Paul Rudd, where he plays Paul Rudd's dad.
Oh.
The James L. Brooks?
I didn't see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not good.
Go figure.
Bad movie. but I think he's pretty much just retired. I don't think he's making movies anymore.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, thank God we have a Christian Slater. In about 10 years, we'll have a Nicholson again.
I mean, in looks, he's just Christian Slater. I love Christian Slater. But whenever he's like tried to be Nicholson-y, it's never really worked out very well.
I mean, we have a whole ass Heathers to say he came close.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's good in Heathers.
Pump up the volume.
Pump up the volume. Yeah.
He's great in it.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, his best work, Alone in the Dark.
Oh, stop.
That one is a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the best part of maybe the angriest I've ever been watching a movie because I felt robbed of my time. Nymphomaniac.
Oh, yeah.
He was amazing in it.
I did not watch that movie.
I didn't
because
see it either.
I did not want to.
Yeah, same.
I think I was just in like a very self-loathing place where I was just like, fuck it. And like played it and I was like, oh, buckle in. And it was the kind of thing where it was like sunken cost fallacy the whole time.
Oh,
where
I was
like, I've been here for so long, and what if there's a payoff later? Yeah. Maybe I should do... So it straight up just became sunken cost, where, like, by hour three, I was like, I don't know, maybe something happens in hour four. By hour four, I was like, all right, it's got to be hour five, and then after 6 hours, I was just like, fuck this experience!
Yeah, I can't even do that anymore. After an hour and a half, I'm done just anything.
Yeah, sunken cost, man.
I love a good 90 minute. Yeah, that's my bag.
How... dare you do nothing for 6 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't like Nicholas. Fuck. Totally. Just my brain just.
Oh,
exploded.
You were thinking of Nicholas Reffin.
I was, but that's
Von Trier,
not really,
right?
Yeah, it's Lars von Trier. I don't know why I said that. I'm so stupid.
I mean, they're both edgelords.
Yeah.
You know, they're both.
Well, easy mix up.
Winding Refn at least has made a couple good movies.
Yeah, I mean, I like a couple of Lars von Trier movies. I like Melancholia. That's probably the end of the list for me.
It's one of the ones that I dislike the least.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's high marks.
And with the Winding Refn, I actually legitimately like Bronson, and I really like, and I think Drive is a good movie.
Drive is decent. Bronson is okay. What's the one, the Viking one he did?
Oh, Valhalla Rising.
Yeah, that one.
It's a pretty interesting. That one I don't love, but I find very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then
Pusher, the Pusher movies.
Oh, yeah.
The Pusher movies are fucking great.
His Danish films are really, really good.
I love the Pusher trilogy, but everything else since, it's been like
Since Drive, it has been testing.
I didn't see Only God Forgives or whatever.
I watched that one, and I cannot remember a single thing that happens in it. And then I've had Neon Demon in my watch list forever, and they've just been like,
everybody hates it. But I
want to watch it.
See it, yeah,
yeah.
It's pretty. It's pretty.
I'm sure he's a great. I mean, he's got a great visual sense.
Yeah.
Speaking of great visual,
Milos
senses,
Forman has a great visual.
Totally agree. I got where you were going with it, and I'm with you.
I feel like most hospital movies today, especially in the lighting and color, want to avoid everything possible to make things look like hospital. And one of the things that I really particularly enjoyed about Cuckoo's Nest is that everything has that, am I awake? What time is it? Lighting to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That the whole time just kind of adds to the disorienting feel of the inside of the hospital. Watching it again for the first time as an adult from when I watched it as a kid, I forgot that McMurphy is a bad dude.
Yeah, no, he's a bad person.
He's a bad person.
He's not a great guy.
Did not catch that as a child.
Yeah, that was the thing that I did not realize also watching it as a teenager, I think. I liked that character. I didn't think that he was a good person, but I liked the character.
Yeah.
Well, you like him because...
But, like, I didn't... Things like... him fucking a 15-year-old when I was watching it when I'm 15, didn't strike me the same way.
Well, because he had
watching
an excuse for it, right?
Exactly.
It's like, well, she said she was 18.
Right, exactly. You know, watching it as a teenager, you're a fucking moron, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I even, as a teenager...
I knew he was a bad guy. Yeah.
I think... Because it's also the kind of thing where, like, if you meet somebody... I don't know if these guys still exist, but, like, when I was in college, there were dudes that, like, the edgy art school and creative writing major guys that were, like... had picture posters of McMurphy up in their dorm room. It was like the pre-Tyler Durden kind of thing where it was like, this is my shitty role model because I read Bukowski and Kerouac and Chandler. Like it's the hard, it's...
He's got an appeal to that kind of, those baser instincts of like... anti-authoritarian, fuck the system.
Oh, you're going to be the piece of shit that ruins my life, and I'm going to let you.
But, like, I found it interesting watching it again, which, and this is the first time in several years that I've seen this movie. But I found it interesting how much, not only did I understand how bad of a person he was, like, before coming to the hospital, but also, how bad what he does in the hospital is.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Because when you watch it, like, at least for me, as, you know, a teenage shithead, and I was not, you know, I am very hard on myself as a young person. But, like, I remember watching it and being like, yeah, fuck yeah, this is cool. You're a fucking, like, he's a rebel, you know, it's that kind of...
When whatever happens, happens at the end, you're like, well, it's not his fault. And you're like, no. It absolutely it is.
Pretty much everything that happens, like, is his fault.
He's,
I mean, you know, I think that Ratchet is still probably a pretty shitty person. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically for how she pushes Billy to kill himself alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, kind of shows who she is as a person.
Yeah. The fact that she has no real... remorse over it.
Yeah.
She has no real remorse. And, like, and how brutal, like, she's his caretaker and knows what his triggers are.
Yeah.
And still intentionally pushes those things in order to threaten him because she's angry. And that, to me, is, like, such an really damnation of her character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But, like, but at the same time, one of the scenes that really stood out for me in this particular rewatch was the scene where everyone reveals that they are in there voluntarily.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
Which I feel is a very good scene and a very important one to, like, for contextualizing everything else that's happening, which is McMurphy's a caged animal.
Yeah.
And he thinks that he's able to, like, get all these other people on his side because they're also caged, but they need to be there.
Yeah.
It's the best way they can get help.
The thing is, he does too. Like, he's there voluntarily as well, but for different reasons. Like, they're there voluntarily because they can't function in society. He's there voluntarily because it's the less painful option for him, or so he thinks.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's the less restrictive option for him.
He thinks it's more like a... seen it get away over the deck.
Yeah, he thinks it's like, well, it's better than prison. And honestly, maybe it is.
Yeah.
I mean, to an extent, but then, you know, there's the whole concept of him, you know, being deemed needing to stay there forever.
Oh, yeah.
Which
is
like, that's, which is.
Well, because he did that. Like, because he went there as like a gag or whatever.
Yeah.
And then. I don't know. It's like the thing is, it says a lot about the movie says a lot about like where mental health care is.
Yeah.
Was. Yeah, and exactly. Is. And, you know, the idea of sanity is like, well, it's relative to what your society allows.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is that McMurphy is way more of a danger to himself and others than anyone else in that.
Oh,
hospital.
Absolutely.
But. You know, but the society we live in is one that kind of is permissive towards his kind of shit.
Yes, yeah, to an extent, or criminalizes.
Or criminalizes it, and then at least if you're someone who doesn't have the resources or privilege to sidestep that, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if he were a senator's son,
yeah,
he wouldn't be in jail.
Obviously.
So, like, he does have this. He is in the law. He is that. God damn it. He is in that place where he can be victimized by you know, the judicial system and our law yeah. enforcement as well. But like, I forgot where I was going with this. That's I had okay. look, I had a thread and I lost it. But the point is that's the scene that like breaks him when he finds out yeah. that all of these people are in there voluntarily, yeah. and it's like, wait, but you guys. It's half like you guys are way worse off than I am.
Yeah.
Why are you in here voluntarily? But it's also half like you can go out in the world. Why don't you just leave?
Yes. And it's also showing that for all of the flaws of the system that it shows, and it is a deeply flawed oh, yeah, yeah. healthcare mm-hmm. system that they show, it's also for a, you know, for many people, it was the best that they can get.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was, I think, a difficult perspective shift, especially for the audience, but also for McMurphy to realize that this thing that is seemingly so despicable and evil and that no one would actively want to take part in is, for some people, that's their salvation. That's yeah. that's how the only way they're going to get better. Yeah,
well, it's like Ratchet even says in the when he's asking about the baseball game.
Yeah.
He's asking about watching the World Series, and she's like, well, we can't, like, there are people in here that would not be good for.
Right.
And that's right. Yeah. Like, she's right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the thing, too, is that Ratchet, I think, is for a while kind of a sympathetic character. Like, despite the fact that, like, you know, even Foreman himself was like, oh, she's a metaphor for the Soviet Union or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, she is kind of a sympathetic. They even have a scene where they're asking, like, what they should do with McMurphy, and her response is like, we have a duty.
Yeah.
We have an obligation to try and help this guy. It feels genuine. Like, yeah. it's not, I don't yeah. think she's exactly. like, oh, I'm going to get him. The problem is that you have this one guy, McMurphy, who's just like representative of, like, you know, the libertarian, like, get rid of all the rules, freedom
yeah.
reigns supreme, without any kind of understanding of what the complexities of that are.
Right. Yeah.
And then you have the other end of that, which is Ratchet, who is, quote unquote, just following orders, you yeah. know, like, this is her job and she does it because she cares, but her blind allegiance to an institution, the one size fits all rules are rules kind of thing.
Right.
Doesn't allow for any kind of
everyone gets lost
nuance.
In the middle.
Yeah. So everybody, exactly. And on
everyone's
both
overlooked
ends,
in the middle.
Yeah.
You have these two extremes that are all about absolutes.
Yeah.
And they have no concern for the details. And then they're butting heads, and everyone in the middle is caught in that.
Right.
And it affects all of them. So by the end, what it is, McMurphy's transformation or his arc is like, well, they just cut a piece of his brain out and that's it for him.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, was it transorbital? Did they go
yeah,
in through
was
his
it,
eye socket?
No, it wasn't through the eye socket. It was, there were scars.
Okay, yeah, that's yeah. right. And then, you know, Chief...
Yeah, Chief kills him. So let's rewind, take a step back.
Sorry.
No.
But
do not apologize. I'm loving all of this.
I just think yeah. that also by that point, Ratchet's arc is that she has gone full on Vader.
Yeah.
Like by yeah. that point, she doesn't have, by the time she does what she does to Billy Bibbit,
yeah.
she no longer has any humanity in her.
Yeah.
Like McMurphy has kind of fucked that up.
He's taken this control from her, and that was such a fundamental part of her personality mm-hmm. that when she loses it, she kind of loses yeah the rest of her
yeah.
humanity
yeah.
and
yeah.
like kind of exposes this more petty side of herself yeah.
seeing her hat on the ground
yeah
like she associates that uniform with her entire identity
yeah
so it's a personal attack when her office is disrespected.
Oh, yeah,
and that's
definitely.
The point of no return
I
for
think,
her.
Yeah, the office thing is definitely yeah. That's the turning for her. But, yeah, let's see. Let's set up, I guess. You know, this is going to be an all-over-the-place episode. I'm not even worried about it. But, like, for those who don't know, One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest is about a prisoner named R.J. McMurphy.
Yeah.
RP, sorry.
Who... no, that's a reasonable collection.
Randall Patrick, yeah. right? Yeah, okay.
Who is arrested and pleads insanity and is now being sent to this mental hospital.
Yeah, and this wasn't a case of wrong guy, wrong time arrest. This wasn't really a case of, oh, I got sold up the river. He did that shit.
Oh yeah, no, he's a shitty person.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that like has just never understood the purpose of rules.
Yeah, he's seemingly a complete anarchist, like just not on an ideological level,
I like to fuck shit up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's a party animal.
If someone tells me to do something, then I am going to do not that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very valid. He might have oppositional defiance disorder, you know? Like,
I think, and that's something I definitely want to talk about is it feels like he pleaded guilty as a means to, like, get easier treatment or something. Yeah. Thanks, but, like, he is not mentally well.
No.
Just from the way that he processes the world is not neurotypical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something, again, not something until as an adult after going through, like, years and years and years of both, like, group therapy and my own fucking time in an inpatient ward to where I was just like, no, he didn't. He should have been there. Should have been there.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that one of the key tragedies and like one of the like fundamental parts of his character is that he is incapable of realizing that in himself. Mm-hmm. He is the entire time that he's there, he never engages with the process of mental health.
Yeah.
as like a practice. And so
no, because
himself
to him,
as an outsider.
Yeah, because to him the entire concept is a sham.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and it's like it's not that he doesn't have a point to some degree, you know, about the idea of like,
as we see this the hospital is very flawed. I would say deeply is it treats people in very inhumane ways very often. Yeah. So he definitely has points, I think.
Yeah.
And when he, as he rebels against this authority.
Yeah, but it's also like there is an element of like, you just never grew up, dude. Like, you need, it's fun to be like, oh, why can't the world be, everybody be cool and happy and just have a good time? And it's like, that's sure.
Yeah.
But like, you're 39 years old.
And his good time involves like, robbing people and assault.
Then the argument is, well, if it didn't cost money, I wouldn't rob it.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like, totally.
Sure.
Totally.
Whatever you say, man.
But there are consequences in the world we live in.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also, very much, it's not the kind of worldview where it's like, oh, this is just my thoughts on rules. It's like, no, it's self-serving.
It's absolutely self-serving.
Because it would be a problem if I robbed you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, like, I mean, I do think that he has a genuine concern for the people he's in there with.
I think he does. Yeah. He's not a sociopath.
No.
Which I think is key. Mm-hmm. Like, I think
it's easy to write him off that way.
Yeah. Like, but he does genuinely start to like the people. And that in its own fucked up way drives some of his actions.
That's kind of what makes it worse.
Yeah. Like, what makes it worse is he meets all these weirdos that he has to live with all the time. And he, like, just through forced contact, just starts to really like him. I did want to talk about some of these side characters. It's a tremendous cast.
Oh, God, the cast we've got in this movie.
We've got Billy Bibbit, played by Brad Dourif,
who we have
talked about on this podcast before.
This is a very pro-Brad Dourif podcast.
When we watched...
I would not be on an anti neutral Brad Dourif podcast.
No, he's a treasure in our society. Mm-hmm. We watched him, of course, in his one of his best roles in Critters 4, Critters in Space.
Yep. Critters 4 is so good. Starring Angela Bassett.
We cannot overstate that Angela Bassett is in Critters 4.
Newsflash, Angela Bassett.
That...
Critters 4.
Cannot be overstated. We've also got my favorite, who I definitely did not realize the first time that I watched this movie, and did not realize for a while, was Danny DeVito.
Yeah, people don't recognize him
Martini?
In this movie. Yeah, Martini.
He is unrecognizable, unless you know that you're looking for Danny DeVito there.
Yeah.
Like, he's a short, squat guy. With like hairy arms and shit, but
he looks way different than the Danny DeVito we remember, even from like
Taxi driver.
Taxi.
Yeah, like by the time of Taxi, which comes out, I believe, a couple years after this.
Yeah, it's not even like long after this.
No, he looks
way different.
And part of it is that character, who is a much gruffer character, mm-hmm. but like that is so much more in line with the future Danny DeVito yeah. that we all know. But I think a big part of it is who this character is. He plays Martini, who is
Livin' DeVito Loca.
Maybe the most likable character in the entire film.
Absolutely. Besides Billy, I think absolutely. Yeah. I think those two are tied for like pure empathy. Mm-hmm. Where like he is just a delightful person. I mean, he's definitely got, you know, problems, but like seems really chill and like likes to smile.
There's an innocence.
He's constantly smiling.
He doesn't stop smiling.
He never stops smiling, but it never feels like a shitty smile. It's never a creepy smile. It's always like this very innocent and very open smile.
It's a happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. No? Yes. And that is like kind of this character who just like, kind of just wants to hang out with everybody mm-hmm. and be included. And he doesn't know anything. He's not very smart, but like he wants to like try and like he wants to get involved.
Yeah. He wants to be social.
Yeah.
He doesn't have like,
he doesn't have many skills.
And
he's not, and again, not very intelligent, but he wants to make friends mm-hmm. and be nice to people. It's really a great performance. I thought he was really good.
Yeah.
Unrecognizable.
You got your Chief Bromden.
And of course, you got Chief Bromden, who's played by Will Sampson, who is a great Native American actor, activist, dope guy. Christopher Lloyd.
Dude, Christopher Lloyd's so great. In it.
And he's so
he's
good.
So fucking good.
His character is amazing. Now, what's funny, like, it's kind of the opposite of Danny DeVito, where
it's like it doesn't matter how much younger he is, we will always like, you could see a picture of Christopher Lloyd at six and you're like, that's Christopher Lloyd.
This is like 12 years before Back to the Future. No, it might have been 10 years before Back to the Future, and he looks like a shaved head Doc Brown. It's really amazing. That guy's been 60 since he was 20 years old.
That's why he looked so young for so long after that point, because it's like you hit 60 at some point.
Exactly.
And then you just stayed 60 even when you're in your 70s.
It's really amazing. And his character is another one, like he's a larger background guy. Like he's not one of the main crew. He goes on all the adventures and stuff, but he's not like one of the...
If this were Girl Interrupted, he'd be like the Clea DuVall character.
Sure, yeah. He's like, he's kind of on the outside, and he's more aggressive. He's kind of got a temper.
Yeah, well, he's clearly the one that's probably most like McMurphy on the outside.
And there's two other, I can't remember off the top of my head which were the other two people who were in there involuntarily. Was it him? I believe, was it Christopher Lloyd was one of the other two who were involuntary?
There's Sidney Lassick's character, Cheswick.
Charlie Cheswick, yeah.
Who is in there
McMurphy,
voluntarily.
Chief, and Cheswick.
It was who?
Oh, he's involuntary?
It's McMurphy, Chief, and... Sorry.
Yeah, Chief is the one that's for sure in there involuntarily, because he...
Sorry. McMurphy, Chief, and Tabor.
Tabor, and that's Christopher Lloyd. It's Christopher Lloyd, yeah.
And you can kind of tell, because he's like... violent.
Yeah, yeah.
He is like he's quick to anger. And,
yeah. He's definitely hurt some people.
You do have Chief, who's like, he's in the book. I don't know if you've read the book.
I've not read the book.
In the book, he is the narrator. He's the perspective character, which makes the ending kind of make a little bit not make more sense. I mean, it makes perfect sense in the context, but like knowing that he's actually really the protagonist of the movie,
I think I admire about the movie is that you know what I mean? Like I like that Forman kind of,
exactly.
Doesn't really make that obvious because that's the thing. That's actually a thing I've wondered. I'm glad you told me that because I've never read the book.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of wondered like, is this movie told from McMurphy's point of view? Like, do we get his perspective? Because he's clearly not the protagonist.
Yeah.
No, he's definitely not. He's a catalyst. If any. Like, his presence is what sets all of the other drama into motion. Yeah. I mean, obviously. I mean, because he's like the main character, but he's not the protagonist.
No, yeah, he's not the most sympathetic.
But yeah, no, it's, the chief is definitely, like, he emerges. And, like, just by nature of his character, it does make sense to keep him in the background because he is, like, his whole thing is he is a silent observer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who it just stands and does, he can speak and can hear, but he chooses not to. And you never really find out why he was in there, and you never really find out what his whole deal is. Which I find very fascinating.
Yeah, because he's the one you want to know. You'd know the least about him, I think, of any of the... I mean, like, Vincent Schiavelli's character, you don't really get on. And Michael Berryman's character, you don't get a lot on.
Again, yeah, the cast in this movie
Michael fucking Berryman.
Michael Berryman and Vincent Schiavelli.
Scatman Crothers is in it.
Scatman
Crothers. Another Shining.
Oh, and Scatman Crothers, this is... when he comes in at the end, his role as the night watchman security guard is so lovely. And I feel so bad for him the whole time because he's just getting steamrolled by these guys.
Yeah.
seems like a nice dude too. I love Scatman Crothers. Oh, what a good guy.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Scatman Crothers.
And it is, I love having Vincent Schiavelli around in the background because he's just such a great, he's got one of the most amazing faces in the history of film.
Yeah.
Just like he's very engaging. You're just like, what is going on with this guy? fascinating dude. Yeah. But yeah, so these are like the other people in the asylum. You got Nurse Ratched, who's
Louise Fletcher is,
she's so good.
Amazing.
Amazing.
One of those where did this person come from roles, and it's like she's been there working, doing good work, and like just hasn't had that kind of an opportunity before, and like she really knocks it out of the park. This character could easily be a one note villain, and like is, I think, written off in a lot of ways, especially in this is one of those movies that has been endlessly referenced and parodied, and there's been a million different spin-offs and knockoffs of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and they always turn Ratched into this very one-note kind of evil authority figure character.
Yeah, and part of that is Foreman making comments about like how she's the Soviet Union. Yeah. She's totalitarianism.
And she does do bad things and is not a great person.
No, but she's
in an impossible position.
She's in an impossible position.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where like when the movie chooses to stay with her enough.
Yeah.
At enough key moments that like, you really feel like you can relate to her, and you feel like you understand who she is and where she comes from, and you might even feel a degree of like pity or sympathy for her.
Definitely felt a lot of sympathy for her, especially on this most recent rewatch. Like, it really came through the humanity of her performance and how dimensional it is.
Yeah, which is something that she, and like after this movie, she kind of got typecast for that.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, like especially on, I don't know, I think her best performance outside of this is maybe on Deep Space Nine, where she plays the religious, the Bajoran religious fanatic.
No, I'm not a Deep Space Nine. I've never watched it.
It's great, but that's probably
because
she plays that character in much the same way. She's a villain.
Yeah.
On that show, but you always understand where she's coming from because she's so good at that.
And that's such a great quality to have in a villain. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always nice to be able to understand your villain as a human.
Yeah.
And I think that especially in the group therapy scenes, which are kind of like the set pieces of the movie.
Oh my God, yeah.
There's a couple group therapy scenes throughout, and they're all fantastic, where you've got this insane cast all together sitting in a circle together and like bouncing off of each other. Yeah. And you've got, Nicholson in the middle kind of stirring shit up and causing trouble and kind of not, I don't want to say back talking, but like causing, you know, talking smack.
Sassing.
Like, fucking, where is my brain?
talking
smack. He's fucking snarking. Snarky. That's the word I was looking for.
I just also found it double funny in a way that you didn't intend to, that you yelled, "Where is my brain?" on a podcast about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I mean, you know, I've had my own experiences with the mental health industry.
Cue the Pixies song right now.
Yeah, hey.
As we watch the Speaking bombs of Tyler go off Durden. Downtown.
Let me say, it wasn't until after being institutionalized that I understand the butt-clenching terror of being told that your stay somewhere is indefinite.
Yeah.
Because nothing like being told that you don't have autonomy for a certain amount of time.
Right, which is, I think, really well played. I think Nicholson, he does a good job of, like, he's always putting on this affect of nothing that happens has any effect on me.
Nothing fazes me.
He's so unflappable, seemingly, but when he finds that out, he does such a good job of still showing the cracks in that facade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, I mean, yeah, have you seen the movie Unsane?
I loved it. Per your recommendation.
Really?
I was really on board with it up until the third act, and I don't like this.
I loved the third act. We won't get too into it because it would be spoilers,
that's a whole other episode.
But like,
I have not. It's been a long time since I turned around on a movie as quickly as I turned on that one.
Oh, see, I was in love with it
the whole time because
all the stuff about
I'd heard a lot of my friends hated it, so I watched it. And was really? Like, what are they talking about? This is great. This is so good.
Yeah,
this is great. This is terrific. What are they talking about? And then it was, oh, God damn it.
See, and I loved all that stuff.
Me too.
Like just the whole, all of the emotional. Anyway. The reason I brought it up is it has a version of the scene, mm-hmm, of that same scene where she is discovering that her stay is going to be much longer than,
yeah,
like, yeah, she, where she just goes in for a doctor's appointment and then ends up being institutionalized. And
what up?
It's such a, and that plays it all the way up, yeah, to horror.
Oh yeah.
Which is, I think, perfect and like matches the pitch, but like, yeah, just, I really love that. And I think that's a,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I never thought your brain could just like make up its own psycho violins, like its own just sound, mm-hmm, as a punctuation for that. But
did you say violence or violins?
Violins.
Oh,
they sound
okay.
The same,
yeah,
coming
Bernard
out of
Herrmann.
My mouth.
Okay.
Yeah. That.
I was like,
yeah.
Yep. Where it's just kind of like 2 weeks. Nah. Months.
Yeah.
Butthole clench.
So yeah, that's what he finds out. What's some other standout moments? And One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That hydrotherapy machine going through the window.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely at the very, very end. But like, there's the moment where he takes everybody out on their field trip.
On the field trip, yeah.
Which is another one of those moments where I'm like, this is an exceptionally bad idea.
This is.
Yep.
But it is nice. But at the same time, like, they all really had fun doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, they should get out and kind of see that. But this guy shouldn't be the one doing
it.
Yeah,
no, he shouldn't be the chaperone.
Yeah, I think it's. I just like the vibe of it in general. It's got that nice, like, mid-70s, and actually, even for 75, it's a little ahead of its time as far as like the general. Like the aesthetic of it,
yeah,
is much more a like late 70s,
yeah,
early 80s kind of thing. But I just love that, like, the opening, the title credits, where it's like,
right,
there's only like four credits or something,
right,
and it's,
yeah,
just like boom, boom, boom over one shot,
yeah,
sun rising. There's a vehicle, okay, we're following it, like,
yeah,
I really like that aesthetic. I like what Forman brings to it.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous film, through and through.
In that way, yeah, he's, you know, he grew up in he's Czech, so he grew up under like four different dictatorships.
Right.
so if anyone's gonna like make a statement about, you know, totalitarianism versus irresponsible autonomy, he's the guy to do it.
Definitely. And I think it threads a nice line.
Yeah, and it almost actually kind of like feels like the Hangover piece to Hair. You know, it's sort of like Hair is this kind of like Czech village, like take on the American counterculture movement, and there's it in itself has a lot of Hangover to it, but it's still bright. You know, it's still like it has a spirit that will not be crushed.
Yeah,
and then One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is like, guess what happened after that?
Yeah,
we all went insane.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, and that's actually kind of interesting. We there was a similar movie that we watched. I don't know if you've ever seen Hal Ashby's Shampoo.
Oh, God, with Beatty.
Yeah, with Beatty.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but yeah.
It slaps.
Great, great movie. But that is set in 1968 on the eve of Nixon's election.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And that's a similar kind of vibe where in Hair you're going from the hippie drug 60s to this heavily authoritarian this darker 70s.
Yeah.
And in one movie in Shampoo it's this 60s late 60s kind of optimism, but it's and like sexual freedom that is constantly overshadowed by the upcoming election of Nixon, which is about to be a disaster.
Happen. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Hell yeah.
Oh, how great. We should watch Medium Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the Haskell Wexler movie where he shot during the 68 DNC protests.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just to really get a stark... what happened?
So why do y'all think it made it to number two financially?
I mean, I don't know. It's an incredible cast. It's a good script. The book was popular.
Yeah.
It
was like right in the middle of the 70s when the auteur thing was still happening.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
this is, you know, reviews drove tickets more than they drive tickets now.
Yeah.
This is before the tentpole blockbusters.
Right. So, well, that's why we chose 75 to begin with, because
it's
Jaws.
It's the year before Jaws broke everything. The year that Jaws did break
exactly.
everything.
And this is in that old model.
Yeah.
Where you would have something and it would release in a couple, in like 40 theaters or whatever. And critics would review it, and they would get good reviews, and then word of mouth would build, and there wouldn't be a big advertising campaign necessarily. You might have a trailer or something, and that would just build and build and build, and then by the time it got to your town, then you would make sure. Well, I heard that Nicholson movie was great, so I'm going to go see that.
Yeah,
and Nicholson's becoming a household name now at this point. You know, he's had Easy Rider and a bunch of other things.
Yeah, because Easy Rider is the movie that transitioned him from like AIP, day player with like four lines, to fucking star.
Exactly.
And
like, I think that's like a main. I think that's the big thing is like. When Jaws comes around, that was a movie where they released it in an unheard of like 500 screens across the country, and they had a giant TV campaign, and they did all of this stuff ahead of this giant marketing push and toys and everything, and that's kind of how every movie is sold now. Like that's it set the format. Whereas all of these other movies that we've talked about in the top 10, they've got to where they were because,
Let's see what the reviews look like.
Yeah. It's either from a new movie from a popular director or with big rising stars.
Or a sequel that people are waiting
gotten for good
for
reviews. Exactly. Or and it's gotten good
point,
reviews. And
Forman had only done Hair.
Right.
In America. I mean, two of his Czech films, like Loves of a Blonde and Fireman's Ball, both played here and were like, you know, successful right, yeah, of course. Critically here. But like the first thing he did here, it wasn't Hair, it was something else, but it like bombed. It was like a huge failure. And then he did Hair. And so, I mean, he still wasn't.
No, yeah. I don't think anyone's going necessarily on
no one was going for him.
For him. Yeah. But I think that added to like the word of mouth yeah. where people are like, this is great. You know, it's based on this book. It, you know, critics are loving it. It's probably going to win some Oscars. We should go see it. And this was a time when, you know, as we've been seeing on this top 10, where smaller scale movies like this could make make a ton of money at the box office because it was mostly adults going and spending the money
yeah. mm-hmm.
to go see movies. You know, we had one kids movie on this whole top 10, and it was the Apple Dumpling Gang.
I was going to say, what was it? 75? What was it? Apple Dumpling Gang. Jesus, yeah. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Hey, it is not worth revisiting.
look, Don Knotts. I'll watch anything that has Don Knotts in it.
And as I made very clear on the episode, Tim Conway is fine as hell in that movie.
A snack.
He is looking like a snack. But other than that, it's not really worth it.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, it also has pre-Hulk Bill Bixby. But anyway, we've talked enough about Apple Dumpling Gang. But yeah, but that's like the only movie for younger audiences in our top 10.
Yeah.
And then we've got Jaws, which is the format of like...
Oh, it's just know, the broadest appeal possible.
It's, yeah, it's the yeah. template of the four quadrant release mm-hmm. yeah. blockbuster. And yeah, it's just interesting how these movies that appealed to the masses, and this is kind of why we switched over to this, to this format of talking about these top tens is like, it's interesting to see how the things that appealed to the broadest, like the widest possible audiences that you can imagine in America, at least, you know, at the time, how they've changed over the years and what constituted the big populist
yeah.
hit.
I mean, the thing about film distribution is that it's always been a very fascinating history. Like, how film distribution has changed over the years. Because, like, even by 75, it was very different
yeah.
than what it was in the mid-60s, which was very different than what it was in the late 40s. Like,
right.
It's gone through all of these different changes with, like, the one constant being, like, the involvement of organized crime
yeah.
for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, but beyond that, like, yeah, it was 75 was the year that it really changed over to kind of how it would go for the next 20 years. And now it's not even the same as it was
yeah.
in the 90s.
Oh, no. I mean,
which is
now
not the
it's
the same as it was in the 80s.
Now, right now, the margins for the widest of the wide release movies are so insane.
Well, and just the fact that nobody makes, you know,
mid-budget
dramas anymore.
Those go to direct-to-streaming at the yeah. time, right now.
Yeah, I watched In the Shadow of the Moon the other mm-hmm. day, the new mm-hmm. Jim Mickle movie, and was like, man, there was a time when a studio would make a movie like this for, like, a modest tens of millions,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
budget.
Yeah, exactly.
And release it in, you know, 3,000 screens,
right.
and it would make a decent amount of money.
And, you know, the thing is that those kinds of movies, if they do get a wide enough release, they do still make money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
These kinds of mid-budget dramas and thrillers and things.
Yeah, or like with the,
but
even
they don't,
science fiction.
The
like,
problem is they don't make $1 billion.
No.
That's
no,
the
no.
And like and so yeah, so there's kind of been much more of a focus on if it doesn't make
yeah.
insane money, then it's not going to get the kind of budget that it might need.
Yeah, it's kind
of interesting. Like, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I don't want to, like, there are still so many good movies that are coming out in theaters, so I don't want to be like I never want to be a negative Nancy about film in that way, but like it is interesting to see how yeah. how things, you know, going through this top 10 has been fascinating, the things that made it into the top 10
yeah.
that I couldn't imagine a modern day version making it onto our top 10 at all. For
it's such interesting snapshots.
Yeah.
Of what society
so many
like
of them. Like,
yeah, nothing. I mean, nothing from the last 10 years that wasn't made by Marvel or Disney would even crack the top 10.
Yeah, like, it's gonna. That's yeah. Everything is kind of gotten dominated by these giant conglomerations. And it all started in this year.
God, I wonder how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think. I'm sure it's all going to be fine.
It's
totally
going to be hella tight.
I can't think of any possible negative ramifications from God, Disney buying Fox.
No, I'm real glad that everything that isn't the Rocky Horror Picture Show from the Fox library is going Jesus. In the fucking vault.
Yeah,
that's great.
That's such a travesty.
I definitely wasn't one of the first casualties to lose a very well-paying job because of the Fox and Disney merger.
You know, it's. I think it's, you know, because as long as the Fantastic Four can fuck Doctor Strange, then nothing else matters.
I want that.
All Fantastic Four of them.
Yeah.
It's a Fantastic Five way.
All four of them to eat out Doctor Strange.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Proud of us.
That's our discussion of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That's it. We're done. It's my fault.
There's so much that I feel like we haven't gotten to, but also this is the kind of movie that I feel like people, you know, you can pick apart endlessly. There's so much here.
Forever.
You know.
Yeah, it's just great. It's a small, quiet, character-driven movie with really broad implications and high emotional stakes. It's just solid performances. And
it's engaging to watch. It's so much fun. And, like, it's got a bunch of humor. And it's
directed by the favorite son of the Czech New Wave.
Exactly.
Where can you go wrong?
Andy.
Sorry.
What?
Why are you just apologizing for your existence?
Fucking chill out. Stop apologizing.
Okay.
What are you, every person I've ever dated?
Yes.
I
have consumed them all. They have become me.
Do you have anything to plug, Andy?
My God, Andy.
Take your time.
New episode of Ghoul School is coming.
Cool.
That's about it. That's all I got.
What's your Twitter?
I'm on the show at Andy_Sell, S-E-L-L. And then I'm on a show called Night of a Thousand Queers or something.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, me too.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
That's because we're hella queers.
I'm not on the show, but I'll high-five you.
All right. Cool.
I mean, if I were doing stand-up currently, I would probably be on the show. I guess. I don't know.
I'm kind of doing stand-up currently. I don't know. I'm on another show in November that I can't remember when.
Same.
December 20-something, I'm on the Giant Robot show. Is that what it's called, Giant Robot? George Chen's show.
I don't know. I'm out of the loop, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm like 1 foot in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm out of the loop, but also trying to hang on to the loop. And my hands hurt.
But if people go to your Twitter,
yeah,
you'll promote your shows.
Maybe.
Probably. I would
throw you a bone, man.
I would say it's a reasonable possibility.
Yes, yes.
So you know that they can find out when that show is going to be.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Vanessa, what's up?
I'm so sorry. I got warm and I yawned.
It's okay.
It's just a weird body response. You can find me on @NesGrit in all forms of social media. Every Thursday, you can check me out on LRA Nation on LRA Network. And every Wednesday, you can catch me in the mornings on Screen Junkies Universe and at night at HyperRPG doing something I can't say yet, but it's spooky related, so you'll like it. I almost fucked something up. But seriously, Wednesday nights, HyperRPG, you're going to want to check that out.
Fuck yeah. You can find me on Twitter at HiThereHidar, and that's it. You can
killing
find
the Twitter game.
No, I'm not.
You made me snort laugh today, Olivia.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, you can find the podcast on social media at Locom Phenom. Please rate, review, subscribe. we've got Jaws coming next week, and then after that, we're gonna be taking a little hiatus.
Hiatus.
Yeah, exactly. That is correct.
I like making puns out of your name.
That's fine. I don't mind. thank you, as always, to Luke Van Trest for our theme song and Jorge Braverol for our artwork. You guys are so fucking talented. I can't even stand it. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much, guys. Goodbye.
Bye.